This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The great rallying cry in American schools in the last decade has been for testing and academic rigor. Results mixed. Now there's a new theme alongside the call for the three R's. It's for focus on the young minds beneath the coursework. It's for habits of attention, perseverance, mindfulness. Some call it character. This hour On Point, teaching habits of mind in school. You can join the conversation. Are you for it? Do we need it? A little time out for mindfulness in school? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Excuse me. Joining me first today from New York is Ingrid Wickelgren, editor for Scientific American Mind and author of their blog, Streams of Consciousness. She took a deep look into this world of mindfulness education in her big piece in the September-October issue of Scientific American Mind, headlined "The Education of Character." Scientists, politicians, and celebrities are remaking schools as gyms for the brain, where teachers build the mental brawn for attention, perseverance, and emotional control. Ingrid Wickelgren, welcome back to On Point. It's great to have you.
Thanks.
So what's this?
Good to be here.
It's good to have you. What's this movement about?
Well, you know, essentially, it's sort of a fundamental rethinking of what education should be. So traditionally, we think of schools as places where teachers provide kids with new information, new skills. And we sort of assume that different kids come to school more or less ready to take in this information or learn these skills. You know, they come, they're either intelligent or they're not. They can focus or they can't. They're motivated or they're not. They're stressed or they're calm. So we kind of take their minds as they come into school for granted. And we just sort of teach children, you know, the best we can, trying to adjust for these different mindsets or learning issues. But so this idea is, you know, what if we could train traits that are sort of fundamental to a child's capacity to learn and even to succeed in life? And that's sort of the goal of the sort of new movement towards social emotional learning. That's what they're calling it. And in particular, when it comes to the brain, these programs are sort of aimed at training a core set of mental capacities called executive functions. And this is sort of like the air traffic control center of your brain, you know, these which sort of manages the comings and goings of planes, you know, on various runways. And in your brain, what this system does is it sort of has three core capacities. One is working memory, which is the ability to sort of hold and manipulate information in your mind. And that's actually tightly linked to intelligence. There's sort of the ability to switch mental gears. And then there's sort of the key to a lot of this social emotional learning, which is a function called inhibitory control, which is essentially the ability to stop doing something when you kind of want to do it, but there's a bigger goal out there that you really want to pursue.
This is sort of the opposite of ADD. Inhibitory control.
Right. Right.
Attention deficit is sort of the opposite there.
Right. It is in some ways, although there are kind of a couple of different aspects. There's sort of the behavior aspect as well as the thought aspect. And, you know, can you keep your goal in mind, right, rather than, say, can you do your homework instead of watching TV?
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting is that this sort of capacity, it turns out there's some data that it is not fixed. I mean, certainly different kids are born with better inhibitory control, which is also kind of termed self-regulation or self-control. There's a few differences between these. But Research is showing that it can be molded, that kids' brains are developing very quickly, and the environment can sort of alter the course of some of these, the development of some of these fundamental capacities. There's also a lot of research that underscores just how important this capacity is. That is, it's sort of more fundamental than even intelligence to both success in school as well as sort of what you're going to become in life and who you are.
Ingrid, what are we talking about in terms of actual exercises or activities here? I mean, the headlines around news coverage of this have been, helping kids get Zen or push for meditation in schools in America. Is that what this is, a push for meditation?
Partly. No, I mean, I think that's a little bit narrow, but certainly in some of these programs, in particular, the program called Mind Up that Goldie Hawn pioneered, has as a core component a very short breathing exercise that's performed three times a day, in which kids essentially are very quiet. They focus on their breath only for 2 minutes, three times a day. Now, it sounds like nothing. It sounds sort of, to at least traditional educators, probably like a waste of time.
What are we doing here? Right.
Exactly. But what the kids are doing is, by focusing on their breath, they are training their attention. And what they're supposed to do is they are supposed to let other thoughts pass them by and not focus on them and really train their thoughts only on their breath. And not only does that train attention, but it also calms them down. And being calm is actually very important to learning, because stress will shut down this part of your brain called the prefrontal cortex that governs these executive functions that are so important to learning. So there are data suggesting that this sort of thing works to both make kids calmer and improve some of their focus.
Well, look at that data, the research behind this. But what about schools actually picking this up? I mean, how widespread is this? Who's adopting it? Are schools really integrating this? What's the picture look like, Ingrid?
So the program, this particular program, and there are other programs that work on social emotional learning as well, but this program is spreading throughout the United States. It is in schools. It's not everywhere. I think there. I'll have to get the figures. I think there's about. It's widespread throughout the U.S. in Vancouver. 75 schools in the U.S., and there's about 175 in Canada. And
are these private schools, public schools, both?
Public, mm-hmm. public primarily. Mm-hmm. There may be private schools as well, but the ones I'm aware of are public. And, in Vancouver, the school board has – that's sort of where this was pioneered, which is not in the U.S., obviously. Mm-hmm. But it was sort of the showcase for this, and that's where a lot of the data has been collected. And that's where the school board has sanctioned it, and there are a lot of training programs around the country to train teachers. So – as teachers become trained and the word spreads, the program sort of gradually expands. And I think, in Vancouver, I know it has been very successful. Anecdotally, the teachers really love it and say it has improved the behavior of the kids in their class, at the very least, which helps them have control of the class and teach more.
We're talking here about mindful education, social and emotional learning, positive psychology along with it. What's Goldie Hawn doing in the middle of this, Ingrid?
Right. So Goldie Hawn, I heard her speak at a conference last year, which was a conference in Aspen on education. And she came to explain how she got involved. Essentially, I think she reached a point in her life at one point in which she kind of had to reboot her own brain, she felt, and got sort of involved in, I think, meditation and mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And then I think in the wake of 9/11, she turned her focus toward children. and was very concerned about sort of the whether children were happy. She said, "I was a very happy child, and I want kids to be happy. And how can you learn and how can you succeed in life if you're not happy?" So she really wanted to kind of give kids peace of mind. And then when she started looking into it, she gathered together all kinds of educators and psychologists and neuroscientists and said, "How can we make kids sort of go to school and sort of come from a better place, a calmer place, so that they're not stressed out?" And she ended up developing this whole program. And I have to say, I was actually sort of impressed. She came sort of from this gut feeling that something needed to happen and then, you know, made a plan and followed through with it and developed something that then actually had some research behind it.
We're going to look at it. Here's Goldie Hawn. This was at a TEDMED conference, San Diego, 2009, telling the crowd why social and emotional learning, she says, is so crucial to a child's healthy development.
MindUp is a way for children to actually get in touch with their emotions, to regulate their emotions, to manage their stress, to all of these things that sort of lead to an inability to focus and a lack of absorption or learning or retention. Also, the joy of going to school. How about that? And with all of it, I thought if we could create an optimistic classroom, a classroom that has a sense of joy, optimism, potential, hopefulness, that we'd be able to create a new world.
Goldie Hawn with no small ambition there, Ingrid. I mean, you're with Scientific American, you know, sort of supposed to put a tough scientific scale up to things. But it looks like you're impressed, Ingrid.
I am. And I have to say that I come a little bit from a bent of teaching, you know, the three R's, the fundamentals in school. So I was very interested in the science that backed up Hawn's approach.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Back to school time is coming, and we're talking today about education going beyond reading, writing, arithmetic, test scores, and the new push to teach character at school, as in perseverance, self-control, mindfulness. Goldie Hawn, the film actor, of all things, has had quite a role in this with her foundation pushing a program called Mind Up, but there are others. Ingrid Wickelgren writes about them in Scientific American Mind, a September-October issue. Big piece. Kind of calling this character, though it may be a new definition in some senses of what that means. She's with us. We'll hear in just a moment from a scientist who's right at the forefront of looking at this. Let's hear from some of our listeners. They've got their own experience. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Marion is calling. Hi, Marion. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I teach middle school, and I feel like we're, as teachers, being asked to do what should actually take place in the home. You know, as I know when I grew up, my parents, you know, helped me with perseverance and the things that, you know, don't give up, do it again, try it again. And that all happened as an infant and then continuing on. So that was the first point. And the other is that as I teach, I see that those students who come with that already instilled in their livelihood, they're attentive in class, they're active in class, and as Goldie Hawn says, you know, happiness in the classroom, but that comes with those kids who already come with that perseverance as a part of their nature. And so I feel like if we teach it at school, is there a longevity that is needed to teach true perseverance, or is it just become another 5 minutes in the classroom every now and then? And then you really don't learn it. It's another word that they pick up on, and you know, it's a dogma. Does it really teach perseverance if we can't do it daily in and out and say, this is what it takes?
Yeah. Marion, you go right to the heart of it. That is so interesting. I mean, here you are, middle school teacher, and you're wondering if it shouldn't come from home. And I'll put that to our guest, Marion. But let me ask you, what if it doesn't come from home? Then, I mean, for whatever reason, then, you know, what should we do?
Well, it does fall on us as teachers, but it can't be just a 5 minute slot here or there or a 10 minute slot. It needs to be something that they have to face daily, and the kids who come into class and it's just such a difference when they come in and they have this instilled, and then the ones who don't understand what it takes to fight through something that they don't understand, and they just give up. So that perseverance is very important. I'm not denying that.
Yeah, Marion, stick with us for a second. Ingrid, what about it? You know, Marion teaches, and she admires these traits. She says they're important, but it sounds as though she's concerned this is kind of a Band-Aid at school on something that ought to be taught bone deep at home.
Right. Well, it can certainly be taught at home, and I think that in certain families it is taught. And you know, one of the things, and in some cases, though, of course, it isn't, as you suggest. Mm-hmm. And one of the points I'd like to make is that children who come from homes where there is a huge amount of stress come to school and they just cannot learn because the stress has pretty much shut down their brains. And that's just very unfortunate. So if there is something we could do to put them in the right framework for learning, then that would be, I think, extremely beneficial. And I think, though, there is also a huge variation even among you know, kids with very stable families and loving parents who try to teach kids different values and prepare them for the rigors of school and of life, in you know, exactly what they're born with. And I'm not saying that school or really even parents can completely alter the genetic makeup of children, but I think what can be done is that you can move children along the spectrum of what they were born to do. So you can push them a little farther in the direction of perseverance, and you can provide them with these attitudes. And to what extent can and should this be done in school? I think that's an open question. What the goal is here, and it has met with some success, is to do this day in and day out, but without taking away from the content. So trying to integrate
the content,
some of
meaning
this,
the traditional subject matter.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, weaving some of this social emotional learning, and it's not just the breathing, but weaving in these ideas throughout the school day as the content is being taught. So I would agree that teachers cannot take on the entire burden of changing children who may be unmotivated into suddenly motivated children, and I'm not sure you can completely flip around the brain. On the other hand, if you ignore it entirely, are we doing these kids a disservice if we're giving them information that they're not absorbing?
I've got so many questions on this front. And how are the state of our kids as they show up in school? Marion, I'm very grateful for your call, kind of voice of experience right there. Let me get a couple more, and we'll go to a big researcher in this front, Mark in St. Catharines, Ontario in Canada. Mark, thanks for calling. You're on.
Thank you. Listen, there's a little consideration I would throw in here is that human beings are complex movements of energy, Tom.
And No doubt.
There's at least two systems that we have. One is the physical system that we take in water and food, and one is the mind. And I believe just as we balance the body with food and energy, that we balance the mind with our thoughts. And who really knows how to think? I mean, we can become depressed. Our mind is moving around. Mindfulness is about bringing that energy of the mind to the best possible state. And that's a very complex thing for someone to even think about in their own household. But as we go through this, we begin to realize that our thoughts matter, that we can have positive attitudes, which will also give the body energy as well. These are two complementary systems. I believe that we have a homeostasis both of the body and the mind.
Do you think public school teachers are prepared to impart that to kids? Can they be given a curriculum that does it?
Tom, time is progressive, right?
Mm.
We're not doing the same thing we did 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
So we've got to get better at it. When I was in school, graduated in 1982, no one talked about depression. No one talked about what your mind was about or any of this mindfulness. It took me a long time going through to balance myself and understand of how I needed to do it. I didn't read it in the book. I began to think about the way, why am I feeling this way, and how can I be more, how can I be a more centered psychological person to do the best that I can? And it has to start somewhere. If you just said someone's going to do it at home, well, what are they going to do at home? Maybe they're already angry. Maybe they're unbalanced in themselves.
Yeah, and that is certainly possible. Mark, you are keen. Call again. I appreciate hearing from you. Marcia, very much. Marcia in Providence, Rhode Island. Marcia, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I agree with everything that's been said. It sounds wonderful. I have experience with this. For 2 years, I taught a program called Consciousness-Based Education in an independent school, in middle school in Providence, Rhode Island. Mm-hmm. And we taught the kids transcendental meditation. It was 140 students. Most of them were not doing well in school. The whole purpose of the of this independent middle school was for them to accelerate their grade. They've all been held back a grade, these kids. And what transcendental meditation did was it quieted down the mind. And we taught the teachers how to run the group meditations. They did it for 10 minutes in the morning and for 10 minutes in the afternoon. And the kids had a lot of very, you know, good experiences. Their grades went up. They felt more, you know, more settled within themselves. And this whole thing is, we have a lot of schools around the country that are practicing this Quiet Time program. It's funded by the David Lynch Foundation. And in San Francisco, we have about 5 schools, and there's about 30 more schools there waiting to start the program. It's just a matter of funding.
So you were in it, and you used it, and you saw it working, and you see it spreading. Marcia, I appreciate that call as well. Let's hear a little bit, just a bit here from more from Goldie Hawn about kids and what they know and don't know about their own brain function. Then we'll bring in a big research voice here. Here's Goldie Hawn again, 2009.
Why don't they know about their brains? Why is it that our children are in the dark with the things that we already know? So we added neuroscience. They learn about their brains. They're learning also about how to quiet their mind, because stress blocks learning. Why? Because when the midbrain is overactivated, the prefrontal cortex, which is our executive function, and all children have one, is blocked off and dims. So when we want to open that up for learning, we have to take the stress away.
And Goldie Hawn has become a champion of doing that with mindfulness education in school. Ingrid Wilkegren with the Scientific American Mind, please stand by there in New York. With us from Chicago right now is Kimberly Schonert-Reichel. She is applied developmental psychologist and professor in the Department of Educational and Counseling Psychology and Special Ed at the University of British Columbia. Done a lot of research on this front. Kim, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
So all that research you've done, I see pages of it here. what did it show us?
Well, you know, there's a couple of things. I want to place this program in a larger context of social and emotional learning. And really starting from the beginning of public education, the focus on not only developing academic achievement, but developing the whole person, you know, to develop national prosperity and good citizens has really been a goal. But the science behind it has only emerged in about the past decade. So that's a really critical component to think about. And for example, social and emotional learning programs, there's a recent meta-analysis of 213 studies looking at kids who had been in programs that promote social and emotional learning, including attention and perseverance, versus kids who weren't in it. And they found, there was over 270,000 children in this study, and they found that children and adolescents who were in programs that promoted social and emotional learning actually not only improved in their behavior, became, you know, less aggressive and had better social and emotional skills, they actually increased academic achievement by 11 percentile points. So what we know now from the science is that you can actually, by doing social and emotional learning and these kinds of programs like Mind Up, that you not only enhance all these positive behaviors and make kids, you know, like learning more, but you actually increase their test scores.
Can you talk, that's an impressive jump. Can you talk about just materially, what is it? What do you do in a classroom that would be part of producing that kind of result? What are the, I don't know, exercises or you name it, for people who have no experience with this, what is it?
Well, you know, social social-emotional learning, I mean, there's a number of different programs, MindUp being one of them. What's important, and I do also want to say, the evidence is, it has to have a strong scientific evidence base where they do tightly controlled randomized clinical trials and have control groups. And so that's really critical. But the kind of things that they do, and I'll give examples from MindUp because that's the one on which I've been...
This is Goldie Hawn's program.
Right, exactly, mm-hmm. The most research. You know, where they do, as Ingrid really described very well, they do this attention 3 times a day where they do a focused breathing. But really that's just one component of it. They do other things such as do gratitude. They take moments to think about what they're thankful for. They develop perspective taking, thinking about how you take another person's perspective in different situations. They also do random acts of kindness where they help others. So, and what's important for SEL, these kinds of programs, that you don't just, they don't just pick them up, you know, through the air, or they actually are malleable. Kids can be taught, and you need explicit instruction in these skills. But they also need to be as a part of the curriculum. They need to be, so for example, when you're doing a story with children, take the, you know, teachers, while they're teaching, they can actually get the children to take the perspective of the characters in the story.
Is there literal meditation as a piece of this?
Yeah, so there is, it's interesting about the whole mindfulness component because it is, again, another emerging area of research, and the brain research on mindfulness is really just exploding and showing that, for example, one recent study showed in adults, and I have to say that's mostly where the research on mindfulness with the brain research is coming from, showed that mindfulness activities, a short one for novices, increased gray matter in the brain.
Can you define mindfulness or describe what it is? I mean, people who are into this know all about it, but many others may not have any idea what you mean by mindfulness.
That's a great question. Of course, that's so important. Really, using Jon Kabat-Zinn, who's one of the pioneers in this area who developed a program called Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, it's really about paying attention in the present moment non-judgmentally. So on the one hand, you could do these mindful activities where you sit and pay attention to your breath and are quiet and just really focus on your breath. And as thoughts start coming in there, you just let them be thoughts and you don't judge like, oh, I should be, you know, paying attention. You know, I'm worried about how I'm going to appear, but you just say, that's a thought. But mindfulness is something that can be done in many different situations. In the Hahn Foundation program, MindUp, they talk about mindful listening. So think about going out with children in a science talk and say, let's go outside and listen to all the sounds we can hear. That would be mindfulness.
Sort of the opposite of a mind that's boiling with all kinds of crisscross thoughts and fragments of emotion.
Exactly. And you think about mindfulness, and I don't know if you've ever taken a walk with a 2 or 3-year-old.
I sure have.
You know, and think about how they can pay attention. And they stop. There's a caterpillar walking on a sidewalk.
It's intoxicating. It's fantastic.
It is. And it's getting back to that. And one of the things about the MindUp program, I have to say, you know, I've done some research on it, was how quick kids were to take it up. It was almost like they said, finally, oh, get to just be quiet and focus and then also say, you know, this is something that they can use in their everyday life to calm their mind.
Oh, well, great. John in Nashville, you're on the air, John.
Hi there, Tom.
Hi.
I'd like to make 2 points. Number one, I'd like to ask your guests on the parallels between mindfulness and school prayer. Because some of the same things are there, the focusing of breath and all that. And also music and art in school as opposed to the abstract sciences and math. When you teach solfege to a student, they learn to focus the tone. They learn to breathe correctly. And all of those things of mindfulness are there. And it's a very tangible thing to do, and it's not abstract.
Prayer, music, art. I will put that to our guests right after the break. John, I appreciate your call from Nashville. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. School days are coming, and we're thinking about the education of our children in this hour, and a new push for what can be called mindfulness education, sort of, perseverance, self-control. being taught actually in the school. Goldie Hawn's got a program that promotes it. It's called Mind Up. Others promoting it as well, saying there's more than the three R's that we need to be teaching in school. Ingrid Wilkigen writes about it very interestingly in the Scientific American Mind September-October issue, and she joins us today from New York. Kimberly Schonert-Reichel is with us from Chicago. She's at the University of British Columbia, done years of research, has had a role in the Mind Up program as well, and is with us today from Chicago. Lots of response online here. Lily says, another Band-Aid program that foists parenting responsibility onto the schools. Character training has merit but does not address fundamental stresses that families in poverty face. Okay, then on the other hand, Mark says many children, especially in struggling schools, have to contend with hunger, abuse, neglect, poverty when they're at home, which must be a significant source of stress. Meditation in school can be a way to release tension for these children and foster the perception of school as a sanctuary. There's two perspectives. Kim, you heard our caller from Nashville, John, just before the break saying, hey, what about, is this part of a kind of continuum that might include music and art and, for that matter, school prayer? What do you say to that, Kim?
Well, those are some interesting questions. I do want to address this issue about mindfulness, which, again, is really an exercise to develop these executive functions, and that's really what we know about paying attention and to the present moment non-judgmentally. So I really I wouldn't necessarily see a connection with prayer, because I think there's all sorts of prayer and things like that. So I just want to focus where the science is really coming from is the executive functions. And
Before we dismiss that out of hand, our caller from Nashville was explicitly saying a kind of prayer that helps you slow down, is related to breath. I mean, I realize it's politically loaded, and yet I don't want to be cavalier about it. I mean, are you open to looking at that, or that's kind of gives you the willies politically?
Well, you know, there's a part that I need to have the science. Mm. I think that's where I come from, and I'd have to know what the research would say and have to do some research actually looking at that to see if, in fact, that would be a focus. So that would be an interesting research question. But I agree with you. Can't dismiss it offhand. It is, of course, a political, hotbed.
What about music and art? They're a bit political, too, these days with cost cutting. And we've got listeners saying, when are you going to do this stuff? Is this going to come at the expense of recess? But are music and art related to what you're talking about here or different?
Well, very interestingly, the Hahn Foundation, the Mind Up program, does have extension activities that relate to music and art. And in fact, I know classrooms in Vancouver, at least, that where the teachers use music activities to develop mindfulness as well, where children and art as well. And I think that the part about music and art, again, it's also so emotional laden. You know, there's such a way to help kids understand their own emotions that emerge and to understand them more explicitly.
Let's go to Lata, calling from Nashua, New Hampshire. Lata, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
My point is, I have taught the little kids pre-kindergarten, kindergarten in Bal Vihar, which is the Chinmaya Mission Hindu philosophy-based.
Okay.
And I used to do 2 minutes of breathing, and my kids who went to public schools would say, oh, this really works, but if we do that in class, we are laughed at because other kids look at it as, what are you trying to do? You know, and so accepting this as a mainstream and expectation of the community that this is something not a quackery, it's not a faith-based, it's more a mindfulness, exactly what it is training the mind, training the executive functions, I'm so happy to hear that this kind of discussion is happening in national public radio, and it gives me hope. And the encouragement. I work with little kids as well as adults, seniors.
A little Hindu breathing exercise, and they may be ready for a lot. And it needn't, as you say, really, the religious aspect may not be the most important thing here. Just get that mindfulness exercise there and be prepared.
Yes, and this is like a tool. The way I used it was a tool for the kids, just like they would say, count 10 before you pounce on somebody, relax. That was a strategy. It was a tool for the kids to learn how to control their emotions, how to improve their attention, or, you know, how to deal with their attention in a chaotic world around them.
We've got it, Lata. You've got a soundtrack to boot. I really appreciate your call. Thank you for that. One more. Steve in Worcester, Massachusetts. Steve, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. There's a few comments I wanted to make. I did mindfulness. I'm a teacher in Worcester. I did mindfulness in school last year, and then the administration said to stop doing that and stick to teaching.
Well, because they said it was a distraction, you didn't have time, you needed to get the test scores up.
They didn't give a reason, but then I gave them a lot of articles about it, so I think I'll be able to do it again next year. The other comment I wanted to make, I always, that's when I did it, I started doing it before each class, and I found it worked really well, especially with kids that were problem behavior, mm-hmm. and the kids that had problem behavior really loved it. But I think I always taught it before teaching Emily Dickinson.
Okay.
Because I think it's a real key to understanding her, mm-hmm. because her poems are really meditations.
Yeah.
You really read them.
Yeah.
And to really understand her, I think you need to understand mindfulness.
But the school said, not now, Steve. We'll see if you get to bring it back this fall. I can certainly see that as a good ramp into Dickinson, and I wish you luck with that, Steve. One more here from New Orleans, Louisiana. Beth is calling. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm a Montessori elementary teacher in New Orleans, and one thing I can say is that for 100 years, Montessori education has said we need to help children develop their self-discipline and their independence and their pro-community behavior, and it's great that the most up-to-date neuroscience is saying what Montessori's been doing works, and it's all related to this mindfulness stuff. My other comment is that I think people are sort of alarmed about the maybe new age feel of mindfulness,
mm-hmm.
But it really makes sense with everything else we're talking about slowing down the digital age, unplugging, taking time to consider your behavior, consider your surroundings. And finally, the last thing I wanted to say is that I do empathize with teachers who say it's one more thing to do, but I do it, and it makes my job more joyful and easier. And my classroom is happier and more peaceful than ever before. So I encourage people to think about it and look at the different aspects.
Absolutely. What about the parents' role in this? I mean, where's the main responsibility, or is it everybody?
Well, I'm really glad you asked, because I think one mistake teachers make is starting to get defensive against parents, feel like teachers are trying, we're being asked to do everything, and parents don't do enough. But if you want parents to collaborate, you have to build relationships with them. You have to educate them. You have to let them educate you. And so I have a constant and flowing communication back and forth with my school parents. It's not always perfect. They don't always love me. I don't always love them. But I establish the same respectful interaction with them that I try to establish with their children. And it almost always works really well. Mm. And once they understand I'm trying to help their kid be a happier and more productive person with better self-control, and that the child's behavior will improve and their learning will improve, parents are usually wonderfully ready to participate in whatever we're doing.
I would think they would be up for the kind of habits of mind that this would help encourage in their kids. Beth, doing it Montessori style in New Orleans, I appreciate your call as well. Ingrid, Kim, please stand by. I want to welcome into our conversation from Basalt, Colorado, Becky Brunig. She's a third grade teacher at Basalt Elementary School. She's a big proponent of this kind of exercise in the classroom, Mind Up and all the rest. Becky, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So tell us your experience with this. You just did a little bit starting the beginning of this year.
Yes.
What did you do with your third graders? How did they respond? What results?
Well, in January, our school, Basalt Elementary School, actually implemented Mind Up across the entire school, which I believe is a big part of implementing something like this, because it provides a common language across the entire school community.
You mean to get everybody in on it?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's not just one classroom. It's the whole school being a part of it, and the teachers at recess duty or the art teacher, anybody has that common language to use with the students and even amongst the staff members.
Mm-hmm. And so give us a sense, if we're sitting in your third grade class with you, we're at one of those little desks, looking around at the other kids doing what's going on? What are you asking them to do?
Well, for Mind Up in my classroom and in our school, we implemented it during our health time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was and the curriculum itself can either be a 15-minute lesson or you can extend it to what you would like it to be. So it happened during the health time for me in the afternoon.
And what is it? What are you doing with the kids?
Well, it starts. There's 15 lessons in the curriculum. Starts with the brain. Teaches the kids how their brain works. It's a really concrete lesson on the parts of their brain, the hippocampus, the amygdala, the prefrontal cortex, and how those parts of their brain work to control their emotions and eventually their learning. And that piece engages the children to take responsibility, and it gives them tools to take responsibility for their emotions and their learning.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It goes through the brain, and then it goes into lessons of sharpening their senses, mindful listening, mindful smelling, mindful movement. And then it talks about attitude, and you do lessons on perspective taking, which is what Kim talked about. And that's an amazing tool to give kids. How can they take somebody else's perspective in a situation that's making them emotionally charged? Then it goes into taking mindful action, taking what they've learned and putting it out into the classroom community, the community outside the school, their home community.
Becky, you've got it down. It sounds like this really got under your skin in a good way. How did the children respond to it? Did you see a difference in them?
You know, I did. It took a little bit of time. It does take time with any curriculum that you introduce into a classroom. It takes time from the teacher learning how the curriculum works, taking time to read the curriculum, finding what works for you and what works for the kids and how to embed it in your daily routine. But I have to admit, after our first lesson on how the brain works and what it does with our emotions, I had a student raise his hand and say, thank you for teaching me this. I really need it.
Is your school going to stick with it there in Basalt?
Yep, we're going to take it this year and start in the fall and use it again.
Sounds like an enthusiastic response there. Becky Brunig at Basalt Elementary School in Basalt, Colorado. Becky, thanks for the report. Thanks very
much. Thank you.
Jennifer in Burlington, Vermont. Jennifer, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I love this this conversation that you're having with teachers. And one of the things we just have done up here with our Education for Sustainability Institute is we've incorporated mindfulness into the training, and the teachers have just really responded saying, you know, this isn't just good for the students, but this is so important for us. You know, they're under a lot of pressure. They're often dealing with kids in trauma that are stressed out when they come into the school. And so we allowed them to experience the mindfulness work in their teacher professional development, and it was so rewarding. And they just said that this is just a reminder for them as learners, remember to breathe, to take time, to integrate the learning. And they were begging for it at the end of the institute, though at the beginning of the institute, they said they weren't really interested in it. And now that was the thing they rated the highest in terms of what they'd like to know more about in the future.
And you're talking not just about them teaching it with their kids, but them practicing it themselves and welcoming
that. Yeah, the personal transformation was incredible to watch, and just the need for them to do that on their own so that they could actually authentically do it with their children.
Wow. And Jennifer, what about though, you know, I could see some teachers saying, look, I got enough to teach already, you know, back off.
You know, that was one of the things that did come up, and they were all responding at the end of this institute where 30% of the time we spent on mindfulness activities without actually calling it that, and then said, did you feel like you learned anything less than you had expected to learn? And they felt that they were ready to learn. There was a lot less disruption. When we rang our chime at the beginning of each circle that we started, they were all present and ready to learn because they had just that 1 or 2 minutes to focus themselves. And they thought, wow, this will be great for my kids, my students. It won't take that long in those transitions that we have so many of in school between subject areas and recess and lunch.
Yeah, ringing our chimes right in school and with the teachers there. Jennifer, thank you for that. And one more, if I may. Saide calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Saide, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to add a counterpoint to this. I mean, I think it's great, the mindfulness. I think it's great that we're creating more conscious individuals. But these are kids. And I think one of the things that's missing in our schools right now is space for kids to be kids. And so instead of having them sit and be quiet as a stress reliever, why aren't we giving them space to be loud? Recesses are being cut more now and that more and more as, you know, we integrate more of these things into the school curriculum and all. And I just really think I taught middle school 7th and 8th graders this summer in Hyde Park in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And these kids came with a lot of stress to school. And the most successful lessons I taught, and this is also summer school, so they really don't want to be there, were ones where they got to go and be loud,
cut loose,
and exploratory, and cut loose, and just be kids.
Hey, Saide, our time is short, but let us pick that up. That's a good point. Kim, how about it? You know, enough with the quiet sitting. Let kids be kids. Let them cut loose, be loud, you know, be big.
Well, I think that all of your callers have raised such really great issues. I've really just loved listening to them. And I think I understand that, well, one of the things about mindfulness is that you don't have to be just quiet. You could be do mindful movement and be moving and around. But one of the other things that I really think about is about mindfulness and other social and emotional learning programs, or the Mind Up program, is that it also helps you learn to be kinder to others, so that when you are just being kids, you know, that there's going to be less bullying occurring, less aggression. So I think that it provides a foundation for being able to have that joy and optimism. And in fact, our research on Mind Up has really found that children who receive the program versus those who don't, one of the most sort of strongest findings have become that they become more optimistic and have more positive emotions. So I think in some ways it actually does get them to get to those core things about being kids.
Mindfulness, paying attention in the present moment without judgment. Ingrid Wickelgren, there's so much on our education plate these days. Do you think you've got a receptive education community in the United States for this kind of call, Ingrid?
Well, it seems promising. I think it will take a bit of education, but there's a good amount of research to back it up. And one of the things I wanted to say is just that there is a lot of evidence, sort of the opposite of stress, that making kids happy releases a chemical in the brain that actually boosts the function of the prefrontal cortex. So if kids are calmer and happier, it sort of does the opposite and gets their mind ready for learning. So making school more fun does seem to be a, yes, matters. And
Ingrid Wickelgren, I'm sorry, we're out of time with Scientific American Mind there. And Kimberly Schoenert-Reichel, thanks to you both. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.